So we start out with negative public opinion, which is most important to at least be aware of, that if you go out and you poll, this is what you find. So that could be depressing at one level. But let me tell you something that people don't think about. There's a whole theory here that I can't get into, but it's the difference between people having a public opinion and people making a public judgment. When people come to so-called public judgment, public opinion is, I'm a Democrat or I'm a Republican and I like people who have a D or R after their name. That's, you have a public opinion about the Democrats or the Republicans. Public judgment is when the public decides that they want to vote for somebody or not vote for somebody, even across party lines, based on some facts. Facts are most important. And public judgment goes deeper than public opinion. When you achieve public judgment about something, especially something that you're not in favor of, you're willing to tax it, you're willing to ban it, you're willing to put warnings on something, that's when you get public judgment. And the political process won't go that far until there's public judgment about something. Now again, there's a whole school of thought here that I don't want to get into, but what we need to do is obviously be engaged in public judgment, because we can't do anything about the public opinion, certainly not in the short term, maybe never, but public judgment can be on our side. Now, when we had, this is an attempt at public opinion. This is when Obamacare was going through the legislative process. And so we put this ad in the New York Times, and basically said, hey, you ought to be concerned about healthcare, but the healthcare bill. But we didn't really say why. All we said, you know, seniors might have to pay more money or your premiums might go up. But there wasn't any fact here. So this is an attempt at creating public opinion about something, kind of soft top line. When you want to get into public judgment, you can't be on the defensive, because when you're on defense, you're always answering somebody else's question. You have to be on offense. If you want to get public judgment on your side, you have to start the conversation. People sometimes ask me, well, how do I know if I'm on offense or defense? And I say, well, you're on defense if you're responding to somebody else. If you're on offense, you know, there are groups out there, and I don't need to name names or what have you. We'll take the labor unions, for example. I'm well known for going after the labor unions for a thousand different reasons. And people say, well, what's your offense? I say, I get up every morning and I try to figure out how to screw with the labor unions. That's my offense, okay? But to do something, to respond to something, I'm just figuring out, how am I going to reduce their brand? How am I going to take their brand down? Everybody has a brand. That's that public opinion brand. So there are three basic ways. This is the, and I will tell you this, this is the niche business that I'm in. It's a very important niche, but it's the niche business that we're retained to do. I tell people, when I'm on offense, I'm going to reframe the issue. I'm not going to allow the conversation to be based upon how somebody else has framed the issue, because then I'm going to be on defense. I'm going to be arguing about what they've said. Repositioning the opposition suggests telling people, oh, you think that this group is a group that does X? Well, let me tell you, what they're really doing is Y. I don't care what they tell you that they're doing something else. One of the classic cases, some of you may have even seen the ads that we do, they represent a lot of agricultural interests who are being attacked by the Humane Society of the United States. Humane Society of the United States is not connected to your local pet shelter. They raise money with these weepy ads on television showing dogs and cats in cages, and they get a lot of money. They get their $19 a month. But then they use the money to attack farms, actually farmers, who raise all sorts of animals for food. Because the Humane Society of the United States, if you look at them, and you don't have to look at them very closely to see this, it's basically a vegan organization. They don't want people killing animals for food. So repositioning them in the public's mind by saying, hey, give to your local shelter, but don't give to the Humane Society of the United States, because they are not who they say they are, is an attempt at repositioning. And then the third one is taking away people's moral authority. Getting people to understand that these people, look, the people in this debate that you're in with today, they weren't appointed to do this. They weren't elected to do this. You might say that Polis was elected, but he wasn't elected to play the role he's playing today. So we have an unappointed group of people, an unelected group of people, and they're managing public opinion, which in turn could conceivably get the public to vote a certain way, or get politicians on another day to vote a certain way. So taking away their moral authority, who the hell are these people? And why are they the ones who are determining what the energy policy of the state or the country, for that matter, should be? So I told you this would be fast, and now I'm going to speed it up. I'm just going to give you a couple of examples of how you do this, and then we'll get into a larger conversation with Jack. You'll be familiar with this ad. If you haven't seen it, you're going to see it now. But this is somebody else. This is the only ad that I have not done that I'm going to show you, or the only thing that's up here. But this is somebody reframing the issue.
If you're an adult who enjoys a good beer, there's a similar product you might want to know about. One without all the calories and serious health problems. Less toxic, so it doesn't cause hangovers or overdose deaths, and it's not linked to violence or reckless behavior. Marijuana, you safer.
You can see how somebody's reframing the debate. What you do oftentimes in framing is use analogies or metaphors and say, well, if you like to drink, let me tell you that this is a better way to go if you're looking to get high. If you're just looking for taste, well, then go drink a Coke. Here's another example. Now, the unions right now, again, unless you've been living in a cave, have been pushing for increased minimum wage at the federal level. So they've had this bus tour, and they're going around with this big bus. They go all around the country with this bus tour saying, we need to raise the minimum wage by 40% to 10-10. And so what we've done, because sometimes we do things that are what you would call street theater, what we've done is we've been chasing this bus around with our own bus or our own truck. And so wherever they go, we go. And doing so, we're reframing this debate. So it's not just about going up to 10-10. There's some other things that people need to think about. And you've got to get people to say, one of my North Stars is to get people to say, you know, I never thought of it that way before. Because if you can get people to say that, here's what you get. Instead of getting the he said, she said debate, which you will get with the fracking debate, oftentimes you're going to get into people get overwhelmed by the science, and I don't know who to believe. But if you've got enough on your side, you get people into a position of paralysis about this issue. After all, we're not experts, and so you don't want them trying to be experts. But if you put enough information out there, say, well, yeah, you can go to 10-10, but you can also lose a lot of jobs. Congressional Budget Office says you can lose a lot of jobs. I mean, and again, we've had a lot of ads on this thing. You get in people's mind a tie. They don't know who's right. And you win all ties, because the tie basically ensures the status quo. People are not prepared to get aggressive and moving one way or the other. So I'll take a tie any day if I'm trying to preserve the status quo. Here's another one on reframing. Some of you may remember the card check debate, where the unions were trying to see to it that there would not be an election to unionize a workplace. All you gotta do is get people to sign cards, even under intimidating circumstances. So we oftentimes will use children or animals. If you want a video to go viral, have kids or animals. So we will use kids. And again, in a metaphorical way, in this case, we're trying to show how the unions don't like to have real elections, and so we put it in the context of an election for class president.
What if labor bosses control class elections?
Thanks for your vote. I want to assure you that a vote for me is best for you. Ms. Hudgens has just agreed that there isn't going to be any secret vote. Sign these cards showing us who you like the best. My campaign committee will collect and count.
Today, thousands of workers are being forced into unions without a secret ballot vote. Reason number 5 for the Employee Rights Act.
You sure about this?
Okay, so that gives you, again, some sense. And by the way, we like to use humor. Some of you have seen our stuff on the fracking side. We like to use humor because humor doesn't offend people, and at the same time, they get the message. If you want to have a really hard-hitting message, that's fine. Sometimes it's very appropriate. Sometimes we do that. But wherever possible, I like to use humor to minimize or marginalize the people on the other side. I talked about repositioning the opposition. Here's another union video, which was very popular, on repositioning. I mean, most people don't know much about unions, right?
What do you love about your union?
You know what I love? Paying union dues, just so I can keep my job.
I think it's great that my union dues are going to politicians I don't even like.
I really like how the union discriminates against minorities.
Nothing makes me feel better than knowing that I'm supporting their fat cat lifestyles.
Corruption, discrimination, politics, and forced dues. Find out the facts about union officials at unionfacts.com.
Thanks, union bosses.
So, again, this is repositioning. This is getting people to say, oh, yeah, I've heard about some of this. You know, when people hear about something, they have to hear about it more than once for them to get it in their head. We have to achieve something that I call common knowledge. And that's another thing that I'm always working towards if we have enough time. And common knowledge, to give you an example, if I were to do a survey in this room and I were to ask you, which is statistically more dangerous on a miles traveled basis? To drive to Denver Airport or to fly to your destination? Statistically, miles traveled basis, drive or fly, most of you would say it's more dangerous to drive to the airport. And I would agree with you. And then I would say, is it 2, 4, or 8 times more dangerous? And all of you would say, I don't know. And then I would say, well, then how do you know it's more dangerous? And you would say, well, everybody knows it's more dangerous. I say, but how do you know? You particularly, where did you find out it was more dangerous? And you say, I don't know, I've heard that. I've heard it a lot of times, everybody knows that. I say, that's right, that's common knowledge. And that comes from people hearing something enough times from enough different places, people repeating it to each other, that you reach a point where you have solidified your position. If we can solidify the position on drilling, fracking, etc., we have achieved something that the other side cannot overcome, because it's very tough to break common knowledge. It's very tough to break first opinions. You know, the guy that gets to make the first opinion, the first impression, has a huge advantage, because people don't want to admit they were wrong the first time. So that's where offense comes in. That's where trying to get there early comes in. Unfortunately, and again, I've done work in a lot of business sectors, people never want to invest in being there early. They only want to invest in stopping something that's a problem, and of course it's a problem after it becomes a big problem. So take that for what it's worth. Here's another one on repositioning the opposition. This was on trial lawyers, and trial lawyers who were suing food companies over the obesity issue.
So you sold my client these chocolate chips, and look, no warning label, just pretty pictures. Just look what this reckless cookie-baking business has done to my client. Your Honor, obviously she's guilty and needs to pay me, my client, damages. You made it taste good on purpose, don't you?
I guess so.
Learn more about lawyers cashing in on obesity at consumerfreedom.com.
And these websites that you see, Union Facts, Consumer Freedom, etc., these are websites that we maintain, and we have about 25 different websites in our firm, probably more than that, on different niche issues. The last thing I said was about diminishing moral authority. Jack will talk to you later about, you know, getting unique spokespersons. In our firm, on the check debate, I got George McGovern to come out and say that the unions were wrong. I represent some alcohol companies. I got Candy Leitner, who started Mothers Against Drunk Driving, to come out and say that MAD was overreaching and that she endorsed our position, our client's position, rather than the MAD position. That is a diminishing of moral authority, where you can get people to be saying something that you wouldn't expect them to be saying. It may be counterintuitive, it may be unusual, but the point is it breaks through. So in diminishing moral authority, sometimes, in this case, you have to be tougher, because you're going after someone that's got a crown on their head. And, you know, if you wanted to attack when she was alive, if you were going to attack Mother Teresa, you better have a very unusual campaign. So hardball is something that I'm a big fan of, applied appropriately. So you see that this is a big billboard near Times Square, and this was about the Humane Society, and this was about trying to get people to say, you know, WTF, where's all the money that the Humane Society collects and they never give it to shelters? I won't show you this whole video. You can go to this video on Google. You can Google lawyers in cages. This has had, you want to talk about something going viral, this has had over 3 million views. And this is a parody of the very nice, soft commercial about raising money for dogs and cats in shelters. But as I told you, the Humane Society doesn't really put the money in the shelters. But the Humane Society employs over 50 lawyers. They have more lawyers that are suing businesses, basically agricultural businesses and the pet industry, they have more lawyers than the White House. So this is a parody. I'll just show you some.
Every day, thousands of lawyers and lobbyists around the country find themselves out of work and unemployed. These lawyers don't have a vacation home. For just $19 a month, you can join the Humane Society of the United States in our fight to hire more lawyers. People often think that we run pet shelters, but that simply isn't true. We don't run a single one, and we only give 1% of your money to pet shelters. Your $19 a month will help us hire even more lawyers and lobbyists and make multi-million dollar donations to our pension fund. Our massive fundraising operation collected $130 million last year, but we need more. If these lawyers could talk, they'd tell you they desperately need you to help them right now.
There's actually a longer version of this on the internet where she says, we're basically just like PETA, except we use, except we have suits and deodorant. but that's in the longer version. What I've tried to do here is I've tried to frame this thing logically for you. Because people are oftentimes getting in a reactive mode. They get angry, then anger leads to reaction. And that sometimes works, but it's not the logical way to go. The logical way to go is to obviously have a positive campaign, which you guys have been doing very good with, because that's that good public opinion component, and also explaining stuff to people. The offense campaign that I'm talking about, the logic in the offense campaign, is diminishing the other side's ability to capture people's imagination and to become credible. I want the other side to not be credible. Because you can either win or they can lose, but you're ahead either way. And so, and that's the logic of this whole position. Let me tell you a story about logic, and then I'll have Jack come up here. Guy walking down the street, and he runs into an old friend of his, and they start talking, and his friend says, "How are you doing?" And the first guy starts complaining. He's got a lower management position, he can't get ahead, and his friend says, "You know why?" He says, "No." He says, "Because you never went to college. You didn't get a degree." He says, "Great, I'm in my 40s. What am I supposed to do about that now?" And his friend says, "Go to the community college here in town. They'll give you schooling. You can go to school at night. Eventually, you'll get a degree, and then you can get a promotion, and you'll have a better life." So it makes sense to him. He goes to the school. He talks to the dean. The dean says, "Yes, we have a lot of adults come in for continuing education. No problem at all. What do you want to study?" He says, "I don't have any idea about any of this." He says, "Just give me a suggestion." The dean says, "Fine. Here's what we do. We start you out with a course in history, a course in English, and a course in logic." And he says, "Logic." He says, "Well, what's logic?" Dean says, "You know what logic is. You know, you learn certain facts that take you to a conclusion, and that conclusion can take you to another fact, and so on, and you can build up a real awareness of something that you never knew before." He said, "I don't understand any of this." Dean says, "Let me give you an example." He says, "Have you got a weed whacker?" He says, "Yeah." He said, "Well, that means you have a lawn." He says, "You have a lawn." He says, "You have a lawn. My guess is you have a house." He says, "I do." He says, "You have a house. I assume you have a family." He says, "I got a family." "You got a family, I assume you're married." He says, "I am." He says, "If you're married, I assume you're heterosexual." He says, "Yes, I am." The dean says, "You see how this goes? One thing leads to another. This is the logic in all this." He says, "That's why they call them logical conclusions." He says, "Okay, I get it. 2 weeks later, he's on the street again, runs into the same old friend he hadn't seen in a long time. They start talking again. His friend says, "How's it going?" He says, "I took your advice, I'm going to school, I'm taking lots of courses, everything's great." His friend says, "What are you taking?" He says, "I'm taking English, I'm taking history, and I'm taking logic." Frank said, "Really?" He says, "What's logic?" He said, "Oh, you don't know what logic is." He said, "Let me explain it to you." He says, "Have you got a weed whacker?" He said, "No." He says, "Well, then you must be gay." Yeah. Let me come up here.
So, my name is Jack Hubbard, and I do own a weed whacker. And I have a wife and two daughters. And it's tough to always follow Rick on any of these things because he does crack me up. But he's really, really good at what he does. And some of you I met last night, and for those of you who I did not meet, I have been working with Rick for 8 years now. And prior to that, I was working on Wall Street. And I sort of came to the revelation when I was working on Wall Street. I became convinced that everyone that I was working with and everyone that I was working for were a bunch of crooks. And I became very, very dispirited. And I then made the decision that I was going to move to Washington, D.C. And now all the crooks go by senator or congressman. But I can honestly say that the 8 years that I've spent here working with Rick have been nothing but fun. And more importantly, as you'll see in this presentation, some of the metrics that we have or we're up to on the environmental front, we really are making a difference. And Rick sometimes likes to say that he does not get involved in anything he doesn't feel passionate about. And I feel very much the same way. And what we're doing here is so important because the implications, if you folks lose this thing, it will obviously be bad for you, it will be bad for your bottom lines, it will be bad for your employees, but it's bad for the state, and it's bad for 68,000 people, or maybe even more, who could lose their jobs. But to rewind a little bit, I want to start by telling you sort of how this whole thing came about. Prior to us getting involved in Colorado, I guess this was maybe 6 to 9 months ago, we received some support from some companies and foundations who had seen a lot of these past ads and campaigns that we ran going after the Humane Society and other people. And they said, my God, we need this for our industry and for our cause right now, because these anti-energy groups are getting a free pass and no one is going on offense against them and hitting back hard. So we received funding to start something called Big Green Radicals. And Big Green Radicals was and continues to be a national campaign. And the initial targets of that campaign were the Sierra Club, NRDC, and Food and Water Watch. And if you're wondering why those three organizations, frankly, were the targets of this public education campaign, while they're all unique, in general, they're all very, very powerful nationally. They're all very, very powerful in Washington, D.C. when it comes to lobbying. They're behind some of the most stringent and nasty anti-energy initiatives and legislation out there. And most of them have very, very large budgets. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But this is how the campaign started. So we thought, how are we going to kick off this campaign? Take the typical Berman and Company model in terms of undermining these folks' credibility and diminish their moral authority. So one of the first things we did, we said, well, let's make this a little personal. Let's find out whether these people are practicing what they preach. And what we did was we conducted a whole bunch of intense opposition research, digging into their board of directors, and we pulled all of the title information for all the vehicles that they own. And we released a report, of which you'll see the findings in a minute, but it really took off and spread like wildfire, because it was a really damning report against them and their board of directors. And this next clip shows you some of the coverage, and this is just one of the examples of the coverage that we received from that report.
Steve. Thank you very much, Brian. The Sierra Club, one of the nation's old environmental organizations, is all about pushing the Obama administration's increased gas mileage or fuel efficiency standard. Just one problem with that. Their board of directors, they don't exactly do what they say. Some of them actually driving around in gas guzzlers. Not only that, but between 2008 and 2012, 99% of the group's donations went to Democrats.
You gotta practice what you preach. If you tell somebody else, you do this, but you don't do it yourself, you are a hypocrite. If you dictate national policy, but you don't support that policy in your own actions, you are a hypocrite. As you say, let's take the case of the Sierra Club.
Sure.
A conservative organization looked at the Sierra Club and what they do. They are saying to the world, you get out there and you drive fuel-efficient cars.
Right.
But the board of directors, 15 of them, of the Sierra Club, they do not practice what they preach. They've got 32 vehicles between them, okay? 15 board members, 32 vehicles. The average fuel economy for those vehicles is 27 miles per gallon. And they've got, in their team, so to speak, 7 SUVs, a couple of luxury Jaguars, which get very low gas mileage. And that fuel economy is about half of what the president wants, and half.
So you can get the gist of it right there. I won't continue. That was a piece of a much longer segment that lasted for about 5 minutes of them just ripping on the Sierra Club. And that television show in the morning is the highest when it comes to folks watching. It's the one that has the highest ratings on cable news. So it's just one example of us really engaging in a way that, you know, gets coverage. There are so many people out there who are producing studies that collect dust on bookshelves, but one of the things that we're really focused on is how do we take the message, put it on a bumper sticker, and get it out to the public so that it gets coverage and you break through the 24/7 news cycle. So let's jump to Colorado. These are things you folks already know, but Colorado is in a very unique position right now, because you have these ballot initiatives, you have the Senate race, and you have the governor's race. And when you combine all of those things, it means there is going to be a ton of left-wing money coming into this state. We've seen inklings of it, but I can honestly tell you the old saying, you ain't seen nothing yet. I think it's going to hold true. And in fact, when I was talking with Rick a little bit before this presentation, he said, you never know what the opposition is going to do in the month or two before, you know, the actual election. And what we anticipate, just based on having done this for a long time, is you're going to see a ramped up intensity that I think will surprise even folks in the industry and political operatives, given these three things all happening at the same time. So how did we get involved in Colorado? The Big Green Radicals campaign gave us the perfect platform to engage, and we have currently received support from companies to take that Big Green Radicals campaign that we started at the national level and dig in at the Colorado level. And to talk through some of the players here, these are folks who we would anticipate are going to get engaged or have already gotten engaged in this fight. Food and Water Watch has an annual budget of $12 million. The Sierra Club, $79 million. Now obviously all of that will not be spent in Colorado, but frankly, there are a lot of folks in the environmental community who are looking at Colorado saying this is great, because this can be a great opportunity to create a copycat scenario where if we're successful here, we can take this strategy and we can run it through other states and other localities. So the stakes are really high here for the Sierra Club and others. The Park Foundation is a left-wing foundation that was started by a wealthy individual whose children's children have, I guess, lost their way and grown up with a lot of money and became left-wing activists. And they spend a lot of money funding these things. And I wouldn't be surprised to see them coming out and funding some of the things going on here. Next is my favorite, Congressman Jared Polis. Worth $68 million, made his money by starting ProFlowers.com and Blue Mountain Greeting Cards. He and his husband, they own three homes, one of which is right outside of Washington, D.C., worth over $5 million. Okay? This guy... I'm not going to comment on the weed whacker, but Polis is so out of touch with the public, because you have this typical wealthy do-gooder left-wing activist who has a seat in Congress who thinks that he can dictate policy for everyone else. And we've dug in really deep on Polis, and you're going to see more stuff coming out. But we've uncovered the fact that currently he has over $1 million invested in the energy industry and energy funds that include companies that have fracking positions. And this is a guy that's out there saying that it's not good enough for all you folks, it needs to be banned in the state, he's making money off of it and collecting dividends. I mean, it's hypocrisy at its worst. Lastly, Tom Steyer. If you don't know who Tom Steyer is, you're gonna know by 2016. Tom Steyer is a wealthy hedge fund manager who is worth $1.6 billion with a B, and for some reason he is obsessed with going after the energy industry, despite the fact that he made a significant amount of his fortune investing in the coal industry, which is beyond wild. But he has come out publicly and said that he is going to spend $100 million this election cycle to elect Democrats and push environmental causes. And you can bet, given the Senate race that's going on here, combined with the ballot issues, I would not be surprised to see millions of dollars coming into this state from this guy. So what does the campaign look like? I'm going to run through pretty quickly what we're up to, but we have an online website. We have some of the best opposition research folks, I think, in the country, not to mention Washington, D.C. These people dig deeper on the bad guys better than anyone else. We've got radio ads. There's going to be television going up. You've probably seen some of our print. And we're really engaged in online advertising because it's a cheap way and an effective way to reach people that you can reach a ton of them with very little money, and you can accomplish the same thing that you might have been able to do with television. So our website is biggreenradicals.com, and there's a significant Colorado page. And what we do on that site, I'm going to show you the online video in a minute, But on the right-hand column, we dig into every group. We list their money, we list their funders, we list their radical positions, and then we even have a section on every single activist. Their rap sheets, the criminal records that they have. We're really making this personal. We're trying to make it so that they don't have any credibility with the public, with the media, or with the legislators. This is a chart that our researchers did, and you're not going to be able to follow it just from a distance. It's one of these things that you have to sit down and read. We've more provided it for the media as well as public, who are the members of the public who are interested in learning more about what's going on. But the web that is being weaved here in Colorado is beyond dizzying. You have multiple shell organizations that are being propped up to hide who's funding what. So people are just disclosing that the shell organization wrote the check, but you don't know who funded that original one. You have outside money getting involved. You have people like Yoko Ono. We'll talk about her in a little bit. You're going to see her get engaged. And one of the things that always strikes me as somewhat funny and disingenuous is that the name of the organization that's sort of behind a lot of this stuff is Frack Free Colorado, and yet Polis, as well as all his cronies, come out and they say, we're not against fracking. And I say to myself, if you're not against fracking, why is your name Frack Free Colorado? I mean, these people have no interest in the industry operating in any way, and I know that the industry right now is split on a compromise, and that has to do with people's positions as well as future aspirations in the state. But I will just warn you, even if you do make this go away, what happens is that, and it's actually a phrase that Rick has told me, when the activists lose, if they do lose, they never say we lost. They say we didn't win yet. And they're going to keep pushing this thing. And Rick's going to talk a little bit about sort of the endless war that you guys are going to be facing in this state. So this is an online video that we have up on our website, and it went up last week. And since then, we've been heavily engaged in running geo-targeted ads focused on Colorado. And as of this morning, 110,000 people have viewed this commercial, this online commercial. 91% are from Colorado. So I'll play it here for you.
If you live in Colorado, you may have seen ads and commercials from radical environmental activists who want you to think they have the state's best interest in mind. They claim to represent local Coloradans, but the truth is, many of these activists actually hail from New York, California, and Washington, D.C. That's a long way from the Front Range. These out-of-state activists are in town pushing a cause that they call local control. It sounds pleasant enough, but in reality, local control means you have no control over your own property. The government does. And so do the wealthy environmentalists who are determined to drive up heating bills by limiting the development of our own natural resources. The activists' favorite tactic is scaring Coloradans with bogus claims about energy development and hydraulic fracturing or fracking. But the facts tell a different story. Even the Environmental Protection Agency, no friend of energy development, has publicly stated that fracking is safe.
I'm not aware of any proven case where the fracking process itself has affected water.
Activists love to spread rumors and scary exaggerations, but scientists say fracking is safe. Unfortunately, twisting the truth isn't even the worst of what these activists will do. Some of the local control organizers in Colorado have disturbing rap sheets, including charges of disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, and harassment. Some have histories that include violent anti-government protests. Radical environmentalists say they care about Colorado, but that's not true. They care about their own agenda, an agenda that will drive jobs out of Colorado, hike prices, and make us more dependent on foreign energy. If we had these resources at home, shouldn't we use them instead of shipping more money and jobs overseas? Find out more at ColoradoGreenRadicals.com.
So that's Hardball, and that's a longer spot because you can do that online. In the next, I guess, probably 2 weeks, we're going to have a television commercial that will definitely be hard-hitting, but it's going to be very humorous. And we're going to run that on television. So between online and TV, we think we can reach a significant number of people in the state, and that advertising budget is going to keep ramping up as we go through the next couple weeks. This is the full-page ad that some of you may have seen in the Denver Post, as well as some other newspapers. And the reason for this ad was, one, to launch the campaign, but it was also a positioning ad. You folks are dealing with multiple ballot initiatives, and it's incredibly complicated and inside baseball when you start talking to people about setbacks and this and that. and vocal control. And next thing you know, you're sitting there trying to play defense against multiple initiatives that are very different and very complex, and the public, frankly, doesn't have the time or the brain to understand them all. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to brand the entire movement that's behind this as not being credible and anti-science. So you can see here, this is our fracking activist. It's actually a gentleman in our office who shot that there. We had a lot of fun shooting it. He's sort of embarrassed that he's on a full page ad in the Denver Post. But it got a lot of great reviews and some earned media coverage, which is great. This is a cartoon. It's more just fun for you guys to see. But the pole is running off the cliff, leaving everybody else. But it shows how isolated he is and the fact that there are so many folks, even on the Democratic side, who are sitting there going, oh my God, please don't do this. So one thing, so this slide is sort of interesting, and Rick hinted at it when he talked about George McGovern coming out against labor unions, or the founder of Mothers Against Drunk Driving coming out in favor of the physicians of the alcohol industry. One of the things that we are very, very good at is engaging unique third party messengers to get involved on this stuff. Where people say, oh my goodness, why are they getting involved? This is really controversial. This is going to get a lot of coverage. And it undermines the credibility of some of the people who are pushing this. Since this is a public venue, I'm not going to go into details as to what we're doing. I will only say you've probably seen some of our work going after some folks through some other organizations and entities. And we're going to keep it up. And if you have any questions or thoughts about that, come talk to me and I can fill you more in on a one-on-one basis as opposed to in a public speech. So coming soon, we're going to be doing TV, we're going to be doing radio, there'll be more print ads, and there will be more online advertising. And along that theme of coming soon, Yoko is probably coming soon, as well as a whole host of other celebrities, whether it be Robert Redford or others. And this is a billboard we put up in Pennsylvania about why don't you take energy advice from the woman who broke up the Beatles. And it's sort of tongue-in-cheek. We have one on Lady Gaga, and we have one on Robert Redford. But the reason I showed it is because you should be prepared that these folks are going to be flying in on their private jets, or maybe not even flying in, maybe just shooting commercials and shipping them into the state. But you're going to see them on TV, and the problem is that the public really does have a celebrity worship culture. But the good news is that there is nothing the public likes more than tearing down celebrities and playing up the hypocrisy angle. So that's just about everything I have to say as to what we're up to. This campaign is going to grow and it's going to become more intense. And Rick's going to talk a little bit more in a minute. But before he comes up here, I just want to share one short, quick story. My grandmother, she was from Brooklyn, and she suffered from dementia later in life. And it was a slow decline. And she started to become more and more inappropriate in the things she said. And she became convinced every single day that she was going to die tomorrow. And she called me, Jackie. She said, Jackie, I'm going to die tomorrow. I need to give you a piece of advice. And this went on for months. And it was everything from business, from life, from marriage to sex, which was really uncomfortable. But one of the last things she told me is she said, Jackie, if you ever get in trouble, and if your back is ever up against the wall, hire a good Jewish lawyer. With that, I hand it over to Rick.
This offensive campaign that is designed to attack, it's not a positive campaign. A lot of times people say, well, we shouldn't be that nasty, we shouldn't be that aggressive. As I told you, you can sometimes marry that aggression with parody. But there is a place for this. There is no silver bullet in these campaigns. There's an offense, there's a defense. There's a pro side, there's an anti side. You can war game this pretty easily. But this is something that, quite frankly, a lot of people leave on the table. I've had clients say to me, you know, I don't really want to attack anybody. That's not who we are. And I say, well, you know, you can either win ugly or lose pretty. You know, you figure out where you want to be, but sometimes this is what you need. I've had people say to me at times that they characterize us in a campaign as being the guys with the black helicopters. And to some degree, that's true. We're doing stuff to diminish the other side's ability to operate. one other North Star, if you will, that I use. Some years ago, I came up with this acronym. I was convinced that you could not get into people's heads and convince them to do something as easily as you could get into their hearts or into their gut to convince them to do something. Because emotions drive people much better than intellectual epiphanies. Oh, I just heard of this, I just heard of that. No, you gotta get people emotionally engaged on the side. So I came up with this acronym FLAGS, which are five big emotions that I look at when I'm trying to pass into people. The first one is fear. The second one is love or like something. The third is anger. Greed has to do with I want to get something out of this for myself. And the fifth one is sympathy. So if you think about how you get to people, it's one of those five emotions. If you can tap into two of them, you're that much better off. The two that resonate the best with people and that we're trying to use in this particular campaign are fear and anger. Anger is what people have over something that has happened. Fear is what people have when they think something might happen. It's when you tell people, be careful what you wish for. The law of unintended consequences. This might happen even though you don't want it to happen. And fear and anger have to be part of this campaign. If you want to win, that's what we're going to do. We're not going to get people to like the oil and gas industry over the next few months. And there is no sympathy for the oil and gas industry, so we're not going to tap into, oh, well, I'm sympathetic to all those poor guys who are running the energy companies. What you've got to do is you got to get people fearful about what is on the table, and you got to get people angry over the fact that they're being misled. Nobody likes being lied to. Nobody likes being told that, oh, this won't hurt. And so that is central to the messaging campaign going forward. And two last slides. Jack mentioned endless war. This is an endless war. What I like to do when I come up against some of these organizations, and you saw some of the budgets that some of these people have, I look at their tax returns. And if they've got a pension plan, and it's a well-funded pension plan, I know that these people are not going away. And so people say, well, if we just win this fight. But no, these people are in business to keep this going. It is a business. They are in the public policy business. They are in the business to change laws. And you change laws by changing people's behavior. You change laws by changing people's attitudes, which in turn is followed by legislators changing their opinion. So think of it as an endless war. And you have to budget for it. A friend of mine, the founder of a big company, was in a room with me. We were talking to a bunch of senior executives, and he got up and he said, I know what all you guys are saying. You're saying it's not in the budget. He said, I've got a solution. Put it in the budget. Because going forward, that's what you've got to do. I mean, there are some things you have to change your business when the external environment is changing around you. And I will tell you, with the advent of the internet, then plus the fact that some of these people have grown up, I mean, these are not kids on vacation at Daytona Beach on spring break. These are serious people who are pressing these issues forward, and they've got money, and they've got agendas, and they've got staff, and they have no natural enemies. If you think about it, these groups, you know, the Sierra Club, who's the natural enemy of the Sierra Club? Who's the enemy of Greenpeace? You know, at the surface, you know, you would love to be a group like that because, it's, you know, everybody should be in favor of you. Who could be against you? That's very difficult to overcome, and they play on that, and they trade on that, and that's our opportunity and also our challenge. So it is an endless war. We're in a game, think of it, someone was using the sports metaphor before. We're in a game with no clock. The game never ends. You move the ball forward, maybe the ball comes back, but the game never ends. The last thing I will tell you, Jack mentioned that there were some companies who have been supporting what we're doing and who have pledged to do some stuff in the future. People always ask me one question all the time. He said, how do I know that I won't be found out as a supporter of what you're doing? We run all of this stuff through nonprofit organizations that are insulated from having to disclose donors. There's total anonymity. People don't know who supports us. We've been doing this for 20-something years in this regard. And to the degree that anybody is concerned about that, I will tell you that there's all sorts of ways, all sorts of firewalls that have been established to get this done on an anonymous basis. And we have just a few minutes left for some questions for him if you want.
Questions? I have a
Hi, thank you. This has been very, very helpful. I was very interested in your comments about emotions. And I think what we're often labeled as an industry is that we're greedy. So they're using fear and greed against us. Do they cancel out? Is there a way that we can defeat their emotional ploys with other emotional ploys?
Well, I didn't discover emotions. Obviously, the other side uses that all the time, and it's one of the reasons why business oftentimes fails in their campaigns. And I mean business writ large, is that they won't get into the emotions. Business gets attacked, and then the group of companies come together who are affected by this. And I'm not referring to your group because Tim has done an excellent job. I see businesses across the board. You guys have done a much, much better job of getting engaged quickly and not waiting until, you know, late August to do something here. But typically what companies do when this emotional attack of greed, if you will, I mean, we're seeing it right now, this minimum wage debate I was referring to, they say, you know, how much money does the chairman of Walmart make? How much money does the chairman of McDonald's make, Starbucks, et cetera, and they're paying their people minimum wage. And I understand that. They're always going to use that. We can't say that we can't play that way. Typically what businesses say is, okay, they've accused us of this. Let's get an economist. We'll get a 17-page report from the economists to say that what the other side says is wrong. And 6 months later, they put out a report. The other side puts their message out on a bumper sticker. And we got the 17-page late report that says the bumper sticker's wrong. Doesn't work. Just because they're using emotion doesn't mean that we can't use emotion. We just have to use emotion that's factually based and go after them, and at the same time say that what they're talking about is incorrect. So you don't get preempted because somebody uses the same tactic that you want to use. But you do learn from your opposition. Remember, they're in the business of doing this. I will say that I didn't just decide all of this on my own. I studied what the other side did to be successful and then translated into how business can use those tactics. Yes, ma'am.
First of all, thank you. It's brilliant in its simplicity, and we appreciate all the help we can get. But I have to ask,
I hate these questions.
who is funding your efforts?
Did you see that last slide? Here's what I tell people. How many of you know who Rachel Maddow is? Okay. If you go to our website, we have a website, BermanCo, BermanCo.com. If you click on my biography, you will see an interview I had with Rachel Maddow. Rachel Maddow beat me up 4 nights in a row. You know, she had this interview. I wasn't there, but she said, let me tell you about Rick Berman. And then the next night she said, hey, remember last night I told you about Rick Berman? Let me tell you about Rick Berman. Again, here's some other stuff. So 4 nights in a row. So I call her up and I say, you know, you just can't do that without giving somebody a chance to respond. She says, fine, if you want to respond, come on the show. So I went on the show and I put the interview on my website because this is all she said, who funds you? And I said to her, I'm not going to tell you who funds me. Maybe NBC. Your boss could be funding me. But it's not up to me to say who funds me. If the company wants to say that they're funding me, or the company wants to tell somebody else, that's their business. It's not up to me. What's up to me to do is to report factually. Jack said that I was a lawyer. It's one of the things that I use in my business is my aversion to being found out of making stuff up. I don't make stuff up. So if I quote authoritative sources, it doesn't matter who funds me. They have given me the opportunity to present a point of view. And if someone says, well, that's not a legitimate point of view, I said, if I cite the chairman of the Department of Public Health at Harvard University and I put that in an ad, I don't have to say who gave me the money for that ad. The question is the ad right or wrong? That's where the deduction. But what people always want to do is they want to know who funds you so that they can then attack the funder. They want to shoot the messenger. And they want to say, if they're funding it, it must be wrong. So I am religious about not allowing company names to ever get used. At least I'm not going to allow that to get used. And I don't want companies to ever admit that, because it does give the other side a way to diminish our message. So if you want to know who's funding us in this room, you'll have to go around and ask everybody individually.
Hey, Rick. Over here. Good to see you again. Great presentation. I'm curious, you touched on budgeting, but you didn't really give a number of what Big Green Radical's annual cost or what it takes to budget for companies that wanted to contribute to that effort.
Okay. So, you know, that's like a question of how high is up. Because you could spend a lot of money. Let me give you an example. We were retained to do a campaign in New Jersey. We had 2 months for the campaign. We were given $2 million. Issue's not important. We started out with 76% disapproval. In 2 months, we got it down to 60% disapproval. So we moved the needle 16 points with $2 million in 2 months. We were really proud of ourselves, except for the fact that we lost, because we started out so bad. You know, 76% is a long way down to having a majority on your side, 76% negative. So that's what $2 billion bought in 2 months. You guys are a lot closer to even. So I would tell you that if between now and the end of the session, if you will, November, if you guys, on what I'm talking about here, I know you're spending a lot of other money on public, on positive stuff, if you spent somewhere between $2 to $3 million on extending this campaign, it would be, I think it would be a game changer. I think the $2 to $3 million would be a game changer. What individual companies contribute is quite frankly up to them. I mean, we've had six-figure contributions to date from a few companies in this room to help us get to where we are. But you know, people gave $50,000, $100,000 more if they thought well of it. That would be up to them. But we don't have a schedule. I will tell you this: all of our money is spent transparently, and if anybody wants to see where it's spent, they can see it. There's very little overhead in something like this, because once you start it, it's just media, and we don't have a big overhead on buying media. We're not, you know, one of these major PR companies that sucks up a lot of money just for food. But it's all very good.
Rich, your anti-union ads were great. How hard was it to find actors, actresses, and film crews that weren't union to film those?
The Thanks Union Bosses one, we filmed that in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. There are no unions there. and quite frankly, if you go to unionfacts.com, Center for Union Facts, there's a lot of stuff that we've done there against unions. And we get a lot of people who want to film and they're not in the union and they have no problem doing it.
So Rick, I really liked your commercials and the way you're going. I think it's really neat. The only thing I have a question on is I've seen commercials in the past and we've gone out and we've been holding on them. What I thought was great polls terribly. Have you polled this and does the public like this? Is it enhancing the direction that we're going, or it could be hurting some of the direction that we're headed with our other campaigns? That's kind of my question.
Right. The answer is yes and no. If you do polling, what we will tend to do is polling on the internet. You know, if you do a focus group, the problem with focus groups is that, quite frankly, the group is too small. And focus groups are usually a qualitative issue, you know, where you're trying to get information back from people about, well, you think we should say it this way, say it that way, et cetera. The polling that we do on the internet is the quantitative polling. It's generally good. But I will tell you this. In an issue like this, where you're starting out, where there's a relatively polarized debate, you know, people hear the word fracking and they don't even like it. You know, I know we can't do anything about it right now, but semantics are very important in these debates, and actually we have in some campaigns actually changed the terms of the debate, because just changing the term changes people's reaction to it. And I can tell you that for the most part, we don't get anybody against us when we do what we do, unless people already dislike us. But we're always aiming for the middle. And on polling, where we see, you know, I care, I don't care, or, you know, I'm somewhere in the middle, we're always aiming for our messages for the people in the middle. I don't try to appeal to people who already believe in us, and I don't try to convince people who are never going to agree with me. So I'm always playing to the middle. And for that, the anecdotal results as well as the polling results support what we do. Now, I will also tell you that we have put ads out that don't work. And when they don't work, I pull them. And one of the ways that you can tell if they're not working, and it's anecdotal, is what kind of mail do you get back? And we look where it's coming from. What's the idea that it's coming from? And secondly, what are people saying? And I can tell you that for the most part, when our stuff is working, it's very viral and people are passing it along. People who don't like something don't pass it on to other people. They just don't like it and send you a nasty note. So, you know, like that Lawyers in Cages, when I see, you know, 3 million people passing along, we put something out the other day, Friday night, and it's already on the internet, and it's already probably close to 1,000 views. I know people are passing it along. And that's as good a measure as anything these days.
Anybody else?
So, getting to your flags acronym there, what about the G in that? How would that play in Colorado? Because, I mean, we're trying to make the point, you take fracking away, you've taken $500 to $600 million away from schools. Is that something that might be looked at, or you're just sticking to fear and anger?
Well, that would make people fearful that the school system was going to be diminished. The greed thing, the emotional greed thing, is that if somebody thinks I could win the lottery, and so, you know, I'm going to make a lot of money off of this thing. And that's where people will use greed to actually want to get someone invested in what they're talking about, selling something to somebody because there's something in it for them. But in this case, it's kind of flipped.
Last chance.
So I'll tell you one more story because you've been a good audience. But it's almost not appropriate for this group, but in some ways it is. It's a story about a guy who is learning how to play golf. And he's taking it on late in life. He's not very good with it. He's a little uncoordinated. And the pro that is trying to teach him is getting very upset that this guy just can't hit the ball decently. And he finally says to the guy, look, I've taught you everything I can possibly teach you. Maybe you're just nervous trying to play in front of me. He says, go on the course by yourself and see if that doesn't relieve the pressure and you might do better. So he goes out, puts the ball, he hits the ball down the fairway. First shot, hits the ball beautifully. Unfortunately, that first shot rolls into a sand trap. And when he gets to the sand trap, he notices that the ball not only hit the sand trap, it just rolled a couple of inches and rolled on top of his tiny little anthill in the sand trap. And so he's a little disgusted that's the result of his first shot, but he pulls out the proper club, he positions his feet properly, he takes a swing, swings through the air, sand and ants are flying every place. When the dust clears, the ball is sitting there, unmoved. So now on top of everything else, he's frustrated. Picks up the club again, he goes through the mental checklist, he brings the club back, slices through the air, sand and ants in every direction, and the ball sits there motionless. And it's about that time that one ant is overheard saying to another, you know, if we're going to survive this ordeal, I think we ought to get on the ball. Thank you.
We appreciate you coming and sharing this with us. In honor of our appreciation, I hope you enjoy that. But
it's a can of gas or air.
It's safe, but oil. Show Rick your appreciation again. I thoroughly enjoyed it. So it's straight up 10 o'clock. We come back here at 10:30. So we'll have our panel discussion. And so stick around and hope you enjoy it.